Welcome to What in God's Name. He is Chris Owen.
And she is Shana Appel.
And we are the podcast that attempts to go deep, stay questioning, and shine the light.
Shine the light, Shana, is exactly what we are aiming to do. We are doing current events and culture in a way that nobody's doing that I know of. We're looking at current events and culture, taking the view from theology and philosophy. Shana, I've got some fan mail to read.
Excellent.
This is from Sarah. Sarah writes on our Facebook page, "Great way to start a day. Lazy Saturday morning, coffee, and the wisdom, humor, and curiosity."
I like the pause there.
Chris
and
Shana.
And the wisdom.
You know why? I
wow.
Because it has the little dot, 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 dot.
Okay.
Thank you, says Sarah. Thank you for engaging with each other so that we may all engage. So, Sarah, thank you so much for this review on our Facebook page. We're so appreciative.
Yes, thank you, Sarah, for tuning in. And here we go.
Today, an interview to play for you. I took my microphones down to Princeton University and had a conversation with Courtney Banghart, who is the head women's basketball coach at Princeton University. She and I had a conversation, Shana, about competition. That was our starting point in the conversation. Of course, from there, we went in certain different and various directions, but it all came back to this core idea of what is competition and what's its role in our culture and how does competition affect who we are as people. So,
well, I just think it's fascinating that a show entitled What in God's Name is now going to do an interview with a basketball coach. So, Chris, I'm fascinated. Go ahead and play the interview. Let's take a listen.
As I said to you in the email, I'm curious, have a conversation with you about competition and winning and losing.
Yeah.
Partly because it's a big part of our culture.
Big time, yeah.
And so I want to
see what that does to people.
Yeah, and just to get your perspective
no doubt.
On it.
Yeah. That's one thing I will say about coaching that's been very part of, I think, what makes it so hard is the depth of the relationships and the breadth you have to have, but it's also that every day you're competing. Every day.
Uh-huh.
Like, you never get to take a day where it's like you're either competing for a recruit, you're competing to, you're teaching your kids how to compete, to have a good practice, you're game planning for another opponent. It's always like competing.
Yeah.
Right? And that makes it unique, I think, in a way. Like, in teaching, you're always growing, right? It's different. You're always competing in coaching.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good thing to talk through.
How do you find that?
I always say no matter what your chosen passion and career is, if it changes who you are, there's going to be a ceiling, right? Because you're only going to be your best if you're in your zone, right? And so for me, the competitiveness that sport brings doesn't change me. I think I have enough balance. I see the growth through competition, and I also see the next day phenomenon, that win or lose, there's always a next day. And if you're too focused on the result, then you're missing the growth. But I see so many of my peers, it affects who they are, whether it's in terms of how they treat other people, how they quickly change their own course, how they quickly go back on what their philosophies were, because the result in some way dictated right and wrong, as opposed to part of the growth.
You are already at the heart of what I'm curious about.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting. That is so interesting what you've just said. So could you say that, I don't want you to be like critical of these people that you're observing, but I can see it certainly in our culture that there's a distortion. That's the word that comes to my mind, that people can become distorted in terms of overemphasis, or is it overemphasis on competition, or is it overemphasis on winning?
I think it's external result being more important than process, right? And it's a book that's out there that's a sport book about the 49ers, Bill Walsh, and it's called The Score Takes Care of Itself, right? And that the premise, obviously the purpose of the book or the explanation of it is that if you take care of the things you can control, the result will be, right? And it really hit home for me. Because you're not in coaching like education. If the growth process is what inspires and ignites you, then the result is a piece of that. But it's the piece that's on the front page, and it's the piece that pays your paycheck. So it's hard not to recognize it, right? And this isn't a hand-holding business, right? This is a me versus you business. I get it. And so I'm as competitive as the guy walking down the street, right? That's just how I'm made. But that's not what I focus on. And I think as a result, I'm almost so competitive that the result is not what I'm actually paying attention to. I'm paying attention to how are we taking care of the things that are going to ultimately help us be successful. So I see it distort people in blame. I see it distort people in letting other people determine your success. I see it distorting people in their priorities, and also people doubting who they are and what they do in a way that you're giving way too much power to the external.
That's very interesting as well. So Courtney, this is just circling back to your story a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm imagining you did not intend to become a women's basketball coach.
You know, I think it was more, I was right on that cusp professionally when the people who I was going through the career search with, my peers in college, almost everybody, including my own parents, had the job they graduated with, and they were still doing that job, oftentimes in the same company, right? Now, of course, this day and age, that doesn't exist, right? There's a ton of pivoting, there's a ton of reinventing, and there's adaptation to the dynamics, you know, the dynamicness of our economy. I was right in the middle. Like I didn't have a lot of examples of people that were able to, and of course I'm coming from an Ivy League background, and so my peers that are going through the job search are career recruiting and their finance and their law and their pre-med and things that I knew I wasn't interested in doing. I think anybody who's known me as long as you have would say, of course she's coaching, right? I mean, I had been a successful student athlete my whole life. It's all I've ever done. I didn't know it could be a vocation, right? I didn't think wearing warm-up pants every day. I didn't think, to be honest, I didn't think other people's expectation or the result was going to be my livelihood. So I went and I was a boarding school teacher, coach, and athletic director. And I got to see that a lot of the lessons that I'm able to experience with my student athletes in the competitive environment is actually a version of teaching that I find really, that I really love. And so like someone else loves history, I just love basketball. But what we're doing together is education. And so even when I went back to Dartmouth to get my graduate degree, I went back to coach and I said, I'll only come back if you'll pay for my master's. And I got a master's in writing, and I had a neuroscience undergraduate degree. So I was as curious academically as I was unsure professionally. And after my, but defended my thesis, I turned 29, and I got a call from the Princeton athletic director all in the same week. And even then, I was like, I can't coach basketball for a living. Now I have two Ivy League degrees. And I came down, I looked at the institution, I looked at the values of the place, and I thought, if I'm going to coach anywhere, it's going to be at a place like this. I'm going to give it a try. And I give a lot of credit to the coaches I've played under, because they showed me the impact that I can have on other people. They also, they didn't show me all the grunt work that coaching was, right? So I've remained hungry to learn more about the business, and I think that's partly why I've been successful.
Yeah.
So yeah, women's basketball coaching, you know, I have a really funny story. So we were, in 2015, we went 30-0. Right, a lot of accolades came from that, and one of them was that I was picked as Fortune magazine's one of the top 50 leaders in the world. Right, with the Pope, with Tim Cook from Nike, you know, I mean from Apple, LeBron James, you name it. So I was at the dinner in New York City, and kind of the honoring dinner, and I was sitting right next to Katie Couric, who was an invited guest at the time, and so she had asked me what do you do, and I literally froze, and I said, I work at Princeton. And she said, oh, Princeton, that's like, you know, what a beautiful campus. I said, yeah. And she said, what did you do? What did you do there? And I just froze again. I was like, here it comes. I'm going to say at an event like this that I coach basketball. And I did. I said, well, I coach women's basketball. And she said, all day. I said, I do it all day, all night, every day, you know. I do think there's a part of me that wouldn't have thought this could be as transformative or honestly as vocational as it is.
So a couple of things that you've said already just draw me to this idea of how we define ourselves from the inside versus how we oftentimes let other people define us from the outside.
Totally.
And So when you were talking about, you know, how you observe an over-focus on winning and the result, mm-hmm. and the accolades that come from that, and perhaps maybe even the money, a higher salary,
prestige, yeah.
all of that, mm-hmm. all of those things that are so attractive, mm-hmm. they're so attractive.
Of course.
Very much valued.
Especially in our culture.
In our culture.
Yeah, very much.
Very much valued in our culture. And so what I hear you, and even that story about, like, I can envision myself in a situation like that where
yeah.
someone says, what do you do? And
right.
you're like, well, I'm not sure if... Like, where am I inside of myself with
yeah.
what I do?
Mm-hmm.
Can I just say, here's what I do?
Mm-hmm.
And that your ability to just articulate that, I think, is it's helpful even for me to hear it, because
mm-hmm.
I think that's it's such a tough dynamic
mm-hmm.
in our culture.
Because in part, right, what makes our culture, I think, so American is that we're always, there's a level of comparison. Right, and the looking around of the truth is somewhere in other people's eyes, right? And so when you're looking around and you're saying who, a lot of the coaches that the college level, when I was figuring out what I was going to do, they didn't necessarily exude the strength of spirit, the inner confidence, the external health that I sort of wanted to, that I felt like I was going to, that felt important to me to live that way. And I had to get over that. So I did it. My thesis in graduate school was an oral history, much like this day and age, the podcast on it was called Leaders Speak, and it was an oral history on coaching. And I met with the Gino Auriemmas, the Kay Yaos, the Gail Gestenkors, the Anson Dorrances, some of these massive names in all different sports, because I sat with them and spent an hour to 2 hours face to face with all of them. And up to 20, and I asked them some really hard questions. Times you've taken the harder right over the easier wrong. What was your journey like? Mistakes you've made, to try to get at, is this something that could be for me, right? And what I left that conversation after all of that research that you kind of put in this massive document that's been very helpful for me to sort back on is the concept of there's a lot of different ways to do it. Just like there's a lot of different ways to do everything. So as soon as you start looking around, you're forgetting that who you are is way more important in life than what you've done. And I tell my athletes that every year. Who we are as a group is way more important than anything else, right? Everything else will come. And I would say that to any aspiring coach or competitor or really any human, you know, that while the world is going to put us in a hierarchy and is going to put us in a comparison through others' eyes, what it comes down to is that none of that is even relevant in the same plane as who you are. And I think that therein lies your own balance mm-hmm. that we all seek,
mm-hmm.
which is hard to do in our business.
So I bet it is. So how do you keep yourself grounded? Like, what practices do you engage in?
Because mm-hmm.
Again, as I hear you talk, I hear somebody who's disciplined in the very best
authentic
sense
way.
Of
yeah.
sense of that. And I don't so in my experience, what you're talking about doesn't come without work
mm-hmm.
and repetition.
Mm-hmm.
Like personal
Find
disciplines.
Your, mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious, like
yeah.
what do you do?
I think probably it's mostly is gratitude with eyes wide open. Right? I'm so grateful for the people that I cross paths with. That could be my hairdresser. I mean, it really doesn't matter. And the admiration I have for people's authentic selves, in a way, gives me increased confidence to be my authentic self, right? And so I think I've always been that way. I have felt, you know, my high school experience, as you and I've talked about, my collegiate experience, I've been in these communities with just people that I have the most utmost respect for. And they've all had different roles in my life and all doing different things. And so I think I've found my admiration for other people, ironically, as we talk about the world of comparisons, has allowed me to live with such gratitude, which makes my own little journey not singular. It's a part of that comprehensive whole. And therein finds my source of inspiration. People are all kind of geared towards certain things, right? Some, the prestige of other people. I think the more you're in coaching, you actually learn that you're never as good as you think you are, and you're never as bad, right? And that's probably true of most professions. But I think I've been in it enough now to see that we were 30 and 0, And then the next day after that season, we were 0-0 again. I think I've been able to really keep everything in perspective with just the gratitude I have to other people, genuinely, not because it's the right thing to do, but it's that I find people fascinating and their stories, their authentic stories, inspiring.
Well, the practice of gratitude is, I mean, coming from my training and my background, I mean, that is a spiritual discipline.
Big time.
It's...
And you have to be thoughtful about it, to look...
And it's... Right, and you're, again, you point out it's not just because your mom taught you to be grateful for things, but there's a really an inward...
Very much.
Attitude, an inward orientation towards Thanksgiving that...
Yes.
That is very grounding.
Yes. I think it... As I work with young people, I don't know a lot about mental health. I don't know a lot about some of the challenges that people are going through. And I think we're all learning in the business that we're in how to help manage that, help them manage themselves through that. But I always say I think gratitude will be a huge part in that. I think helping our younger generations who are social media, having to deal with the social media external views of other people, if we can put gratitude in the middle of who people are, I think some of this stuff will be easier to sort through.
Yeah. The other thing that gratitude does is it gets you out of the center.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in coaching, the whole world's putting you in the center. You know, like your fan base comes because they want to see the head coach. They want to shake her hand after. Recruits are coming to Princeton because they want to play for me. Right? Courtney's win-loss record is... everything is... geared towards you or your star or what you're wearing across your shirt every day that represents your university or your program. And I think we're getting to what's actually real is that, yeah, thinking about the gratitude you have towards others means that I don't feel the burden of living up to everybody's, wow, you're 30, you know, you're the winningest coach in Princeton history. You're the winningest coach in Ivy history. I'm not burdened by that, I have to say, Chris. I'm really not. It's a byproduct of doing things the right way and, more importantly, treating people the right way.
Sure.
And I think it's one of those things. I think there's got to be a way to academically help people learn the skill of gratitude. So I think it will single-handedly improve humanity.
Yeah, yeah. So you've mentioned this a little bit already in the conversation, but I just want to ask it directly. When a player leaves your program, what do you want that young woman to know about winning?
That's a deep question. I love it. About winning, probably how hard it is to win. So you have to have, you have to respect it. The sustained excellence is more about you than about anybody else. You know, a line we talk about a lot in our program is that the best way to help your team is to help yourself. So the better you are, the better your team's going to be. So your team isn't your crutch. It's also not your cloud. Your piece in our puzzle is a huge part of our success. Part of my job is to harden them on how hard it is to win, right? Not only how collective it is, right? And how, again, you're that, as we circle back, like you're a piece of the whole, right? But your piece is key, but also how hard it is to do it. And so you're going to go out and be in board meetings or in school discussions or in policy committee things that are going to be really hard and challenging. And when things are hard, there's an internal compass and there's also a collective comprehensive whole. So probably I would say those two things most often.
You said the team is not your crutch and the team is not your
cloud. Meaning like if all we do is coach team, if you're one of the lower minute getters, you can be like, well, my team's good. So I can just kind of roll with it. And so you're kind of hanging on up to the clouds on how good my team is, right? Or the opposite. I've got a great role. I'm the best player. My team's here. So my team's already good. I think we don't want to lose ourselves. I actually don't talk about team a lot, even though I think we're probably one of the most cohesive teams in Division I basketball. I'm on a unique journey with Chris Owen. I'm on a unique journey with Bella Allery. I'm on a unique journey. And if your growth curve is at a 45-degree angle, our team's going to be really good because your investment is going to be entirely. You know, it's that connectivity, you know, that investment in your own journey.
That's a beautiful vision because when you were talking about crutch and cloud, that's part of what I latched onto, which you said then later, which is that you're focused on each individual journey. And I was a crappy junior high school basketball player, and the coach had no time for me, and I stopped playing.
Of course.
Anyway, that's my career.
Yeah.
We'll leave that aside. But wouldn't it have been liberating to have a a coach who could have taken that interest.
Yeah, and we're not all equal, right? So there's going to be things that on a school board, everyone's mm-hmm. going to have a different skill set, right? In a corporation, in a hospital, in any number of institutions that are, everything's collective at some point, they're going to have very different skill sets. So you're not always the best, you're not always the worst, right? But you're on your journey. And I think partly where our success has come from at Princeton is that everyone who's left here, their journey has been formative, and they're grateful for it. And so this weekend upcoming is our alumni weekend, and there'll be 50 alumni back. Almost every alumni coach in 10 years will be back. This journey of empowerment has mattered to them. So I'm doing something right. And by the way, we're winning games as we go. But I'm not coaching for the scoreboard. I'm not coaching so that when I go to the grocery store, the person in aisle 3 is happy that I'm there. So many coaches can get caught in that. You know, you're out to dinner and you do. You get told how great your team is. You get told how great you are. You get alumni reaching, you know, you get donors reaching out and a lot of people giving you positive feedback and positive praise until you lose. And then you get some negative praise. And I can't worry about all that. I worry about the kids I'm serving.
So, Shayna, that's part one of our conversation with Courtney. We're going to play part two of the conversation for our next show on January 20th. But let's pause for a moment now and lift up some of the parts of our interview with Courtney that we want to raise up.
Well, I'm just fascinated, Chris, to know what attracted you to Courtney as an interview, as the object of your interview.
Yeah, for sure. So part of what we want to do on this show is to have conversations with people who are engaged in the world in various ways as a vehicle, as a way to have philosophical and theological reflection. So I knew...
She was great, by the way. She was awesome.
Yeah, Courtney's fantastic. I know her to be reflective about what she does. I know her to be deeply engaged in what she does. And those are the kind of people we want to talk to. Courtney does not have a theological or philosophical training or background, but we can use what she says for our own reflections and for the edification.
She may not have a formal background, but
exactly.
She certainly reflects that level of thinking.
Yeah. And so that would be Courtney as a person. And then the topic of competition, Shayna, I think is central to our culture. Well, central might be too strong,
but I think it is a central, and she definitely makes that point, that it is a central fact of our culture. There are winners and there are losers.
And so two of the things that I loved about that first part of the interview, one was her identifying this practice of gratitude that she practices as a way to center herself in the midst of the world trying to place her on a pedestal, the world trying to place her in the center. Practice of gratitude, again, not as an outer politeness saying thank you, but really the inner attitude.
The cultivation of that as a spiritual practice is very balancing. It balances out all sorts of stuff. It balances out depression. It balances out anger. It balances out loss. It balances out grief.
Yeah.
Gratitude's like sort of the vitamin C, if you will, of the, you know, of the spiritual world.
Makes
in
the
sense
immune
that
system
it,
stronger.
Well, it just fights off so much.
Yeah.
You know, it's just so effective. She said the world is constantly trying to put me in the center, you know, the coach and what am I doing and how am I, my team winning. And she, you know, she says the same thing to her players, that the world is constantly trying to put us at the center. Gratitude balances that out. I'm curious if you have any thoughts as to why that works.
If you are thankful, then there is some thing or somebody that you are thankful for. And so automatically you're in relationship, and you're in relationship in a humble way. A slave and a slave owner are in relationship, but that's a power over.
Right, right.
Gratitude is a kind of relationship where there's just power with. Tell me what you took away from that interview.
Well, one of the things that jumped out at me right at the very end was when she talked about not talking about team. She said, I don't talk about team. I talk about, you know, sort of individuals. And it just struck me that in that moment, she really is a women's basketball coach, because when you talk to men's coaches, they're always talking about team. They're, you know, always trying to get men to work together cohesively. Whereas with women, I think, and obviously these are generalizations, but I think women are just more either inculcated or genetically predisposed, not sure which, to be part of team, to function together in that dynamic relationship, so that in order for her to get the best performance out of her athletes, she needs to get them thinking about putting themselves first, which may be for many of the young women she's coaching, you know, she may well be the first person who's come along in their lives and suggested that they do that, you know, that they put themselves first and to be the best person you can be, because this team can't be awesome until every single member on it is awesome.
I love that you bring that perspective, Shayna, because I did not think of that at all when I was listening. And of course, that's a reflection of my limitation as...
No, it's just a reflection of my social location.
You're so exactly. Well, and that's a limitation. I mean, we're all limited in that way. Yeah. I don't mean limitation as a pejorative. It's just recognition that we have perspectives and they don't cover all perspectives. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was fascinating. And it was also just so refreshing to hear somebody who's engaged in this work, for whom winning is wonderful and winning is a goal, but it is not a goal that should
change who you are
or obliterate, other goals. That there's not this sort of, you know, to win at all costs, because that's that external accolade that wipes out the internal compass or mutes it.
And it definitely goes beyond sports, right?
It absolutely goes
permeates.
Beyond sports.
And that's and that element is just in our culture in so many ways. And so, again, back to this culture, this time that we live in. And we will get back to the second half of this interview with Courtney on the 17th of January, our next show.
Go to our website at whatingods.com, one word, no apostrophes, or look us up on Facebook.
Be curious, Shayna.
Stay questioning, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely, and let's shed some light.